Welcome back. This is Rick Kogan. The show is After Hours, and one of my favorite authors, in part because I get to read him so often because he's so prolific, is Rich Cohn, a child of Glenn Cohn, now living out east. How are you, Rich?
I'm good.
Good. The latest book featured on CBS Morning News yesterday is titled Pee-wee's Confessions of a Hockey Parent. It is the story of you and your son, Micah, playing hockey. And it's what I get from you in the book is it's no game. I mean, you shouldn't care, but you care intensely and almost manically, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, I grew up, you know, Cubs fan and Bears fan. And
written fine books about both, yeah.
If you get into your kid's sports in a way that's probably unhealthy and might require counseling or medication, you realize that it's just way more intense. I mean, you're watching your kid play a game and get involved in it is one of the most intense experiences that I've ever been involved in my life. So,
what did you wind up saying?
My kid's hockey cured me of my Bears addiction, I'll say that.
Well, if you're watching the game now, the game itself would cure you of your Bears addiction.
Yeah.
Did you played hockey as a child, did you not?
I did. You know, Chicago, we lived in Libertyville,
yep.
Played in the Deerfield bubble, which was the coldest rink in the history of the world, and gave us a huge home ice advantage because other teams didn't care about beating us. They just wanted to get off the ice as quickly as possible. The winters were long, and there wasn't a lot to do. They hadn't built the malls yet, so yep. We'd go to the hockey rink all day.
What was your childhood relationship to hockey and your dad? Because I'm thinking that when I got what struck me in the book, profoundly, Pee-wee's Confessions of a Hockey Parent, is when I played organized sports, my parents didn't care. they did not come to games. I think now there is a much more hands-on aesthetic going on with parents and kids who play sports and kids who play violin and kids who do anything. They're much more of a helicoptering going on there. What was it like with you and your dad?
It's a complete generational change. That's part of what interested me so much as soon as my older son started playing. My father grew up in Brooklyn. He played basketball. He was actually a basketball coach at a pretty high level. He didn't know anything about hockey. My parents would just drop us off. I would spend the whole day and just jump into any games where they needed a player. My mom would sometimes not even go into the parking lot because she didn't want to get stuck in the traffic. When I got home, she would just say, "How'd it go?" And that was the end of it.
Yeah.
I think my father came in my whole hockey career to two of my games, and he only ever said anything one time when I was sort of laid out and lying on the ice. He yelled from the stands, "You're not hurt." And that's it.
That was exactly. My father saw me play football once. And very late in my career, senior year of high school, and later that night somewhere, he said, "Well, you never told me that you were like a starting halfback." And I said, "Well, if I had told you, Dad, what?" He goes, "Well, I just would have liked to know. I just would have liked to know." The place in beside the generational kind of shift here, the place Micah was playing attracted a very, very eclectic crowd of parents, did it not? I mean, there's a Lamborghini.
Yeah, I mean, hockey's a sport I really know as a parent, which is we're kind of in a town in Connecticut. I don't even know what you would compare it to, but it's sort of between the very rich towns and the really working class towns. So we draw some of these, you know, people go hunting around for the best programs for their kids. So we have, you know, very wealthy parents and parents that don't have any money at all, you know, and are getting sponsored by the rink. And you don't know. But the realization for me is I was sitting in the parking lot one day talking on the phone, and I really looked around for the first time. I'm like, this parking lot's crazy.
Right.
There's like $120,000 cars and like beat up old pickup trucks. And I just feel like everybody, the hockey rink was a place where America was kind of working when it was working, because all that disappeared and it just became about the team. And that's the thing I loved about it.
When you could separate yourself emotionally from Micah's playing and the team's playing on the ice, when did it occur to you? I mean, you're a great observer of life in general. when did it occur to you that, well, there might be a book in this thing?
I was talking to a friend of mine. I was at, what happened is, you know, now it's so much about the skating and skills, and I think that Malcolm Gladwell book, The Tipping Point, had such a big, or The Outliers.
Yeah.
It had this thing that said if you practice for
10,000 hours, yep,
you become a master. And what he doesn't say is, like, you can practice 10,000 hours and still suck.
And not become a master.
Right, which is what most of us is.
And yeah, exactly.
For most of us, we don't consider practicing. I mean, we're playing and we're goofing around, and that's practicing. But basically, I went off, and I'm like, everyone's getting better, and he seems not to be getting better. Maybe I should sneak him off. And I was asking other parents, what is he missing? Maybe I should sneak him off for a private lesson. I went to the other rink to get him a private lesson. All the parents were there getting private lessons.
Yeah, yeah.
And, like, no one had told me. And I got really mad, you know, because this whole fear, that's the thing that changed. Like, the aspect of the team is gone, and it's like every parent for their kid.
Yeah.
And making sure their kid, not even that the kid gets to the next level, but kind of isn't left behind. And I was going through the whole geometry of the team and the parent coaches and who was in and who was out and getting completely involved to a friend of mine. And I just realized that this is like the most intense experience I've had since I was a kid. And I'm making it sound bad, but it wasn't, because on the other side, when your kid scores a goal or does something great, there's just nothing, for me, there was nothing like that in the world. So it was, and I realized that it was stupid. He's not a great hockey player. This isn't a kid that's going to play college hockey. He's
right.
An average hockey player, but you get so absorbed in it, and then you realize it becomes a substitute for the whole way the world works and for what's right and what's wrong. And it just, I found it overwhelming. And then, of course, you know, as a fan of books and movies, like, my favorite movie growing up was Bad News Bears.
Bad News Bears, yeah, yeah. I'm talking
Slapshot, and I'm like, here's a chance to combine the Bad News Bears and Slapshot into a book.
It's a remarkable book. It got me on a number of different levels. We're talking with Rich Cohen. You can go to richcohen.com to get all sorts of information. We're going to talk about some of his other books, but we're just going to concentrate a little bit after a commercial break on Pee-wee's Confessions of a Hockey Parent, and he is in a very confessional mode. We'll be right back. If you go to the website, richcohen.com, you'll find out all the books that my friend Rich Cohen has written. The latest is Pee-wee's Confessions of a Hockey Parent, and it is a forthright confession. One of the things that I really enjoyed about this, because I never learned to skate as a kid growing up in Old Town, so hockey is among the most, it's as mysterious as cricket is to me, Rich. And you, on the other hand, you would convince me, you did in the book, and you do it over drinks or something, that hockey is the best sport for this kid-parent relationship. Expand on that.
Well, first of all, hockey has a great advantage of the playing surface is surrounded by plexiglass, so the kids can't hear the parents, and the parents are kept at a safe distance from the kids. And I say this as a kid who had a Little League game, a parent ran out into the field at one of our games, so that's good. And the parents are sort of safely roped off, and the kids are on their own. So also, you know, it's the thing about football, I never played football, and I'm a big football fan, but the thing that bothered me about football, watching my friends play it, is it seemed so hierarchical, you know.
Halfback, quarterback, halfbacks, yeah. Being a lineman
I had a friend who played at New Trier who never played, and after the game he used to roll around in the dirt so he could tell his parents that he'd actually been involved in the action, you know.
His parents weren't going to see the games, that's good.
They were at home, and he'd come home and he'd go, look, I'm covered in dirt, I did a lot of stuff today. And, you know, he never got in the game. Or you get in the game and you're like an offensive lineman, and then what you're involved in is like shoving another kid up and down the field.
Sumo wrestling.
It's not the game you think of when you think of football. It's a different game inside the game. So,
sure.
And a lot of it's about size and all that. And basketball is my father's sport, so he was really, could be tough when he dealt with basketball. But also, basketball is so much about height, you know. And to be a good small player, you have to be so good.
Yeah.
You know, so hockey is a good sport if you're like a normal, middle-sized, small person. And it's a sport where it doesn't really matter. There's offense and defense. The goalie's the only one who can sort of set off.
Right.
It's sort of interchangeable pieces. Everybody moving up and back. Everybody has to swap positions. Everyone Anyone on the ice can score. You can score basically from any spot on the ice, you know, depending on the circumstances. So there's this great kind of teamwork, and really when it's working, it's such a fast game, and the passing is so important that you have to sort of sublimate your own. The best players have to sublimate their own individual talent to make the whole thing work and the whole team work. And the teams, when they don't work, is when the parents are too involved and the kids are out for themselves and the whole thing falls apart. And that's an interesting lesson too. So, and there's a physical element to it, which always seemed good because you realize that getting knocked down isn't the worst thing in the world.
Right.
And
right.
And it's an incredibly intense, you know, workout. I mean, you that is why you go to a hockey rink and you know it's a great workout because it stinks. And I'm driving around in my car. I forget to take my kid's bag out of the back of my car. My car is basically ruined now. It's like driving around in a sock. So,
do you still play at all? Do you still skate or play?
I play in the adult league here. You know, it's just sort of old man. It's like play, again, it's like when I used to play my dad in basketball and he was wearing his loafers, you know, and I could hear the chains jingle around in the pocket. Basically like that.
It occurs to me that these parents taking their kids to the, you know, secret rink next door to try to get them better and give them some kind of hockey lessons or something. This is a sport of meritocracy, I think, it's a team. It's a team. Why are these parents, do they just want them to be better? And how much does it have to do with them to have the child be a kind of athletic, mini-athletic version of them?
Well, it's interesting. I had this big, I always thought that parents who kind of got overly involved in sports, you know, other than just because they love the sport and
right.
get involved
yeah.
in it, and that's, I feel like what happened to me, and you kind of lose yourself. A lot of that, you always heard oh, you know, he wasn't very good himself. He's trying to live through his kid. He's trying to make his kid be the player he wasn't or whatever. And when I got into this world, I realized, I felt that's not what was going on. What was going on is when your kid did better, you actually got treated better. You have, like, higher status. To have a kid who's a superstar makes you kind of a superstar at the rink. It's like being, you know, Barbara Streisand's mother or something.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And you're actually treated better. And then these teams, it's like we have four teams, you know, by skill level, and the parents of the best players sit by themselves mostly. And if your kid – and it's almost fear as much as anything. It's fear of being left behind and being out of the group or something. And it's – so a lot of the stuff with the parents is that. And then also, I think that, to me, like looking at this, I felt like there's a big change in America that goes way back, which is like there's two kinds of hockey or sports parents, let's say.
Yeah.
And one was, and this probably all comes from movies. You know, I love that movie, the biopic about Newt Rockne.
Sure.
When I was a kid. And Newt Rockne wanted to go out and play football, and his parents forbid it.
Mm-hmm.
And he had to sneak out, and he'd like wreck his shirt and have to hide his shirt, and he'd get like spanked if he got caught playing sports. And that same with the Lou Gehrig movie, you know?
Yeah.
And then by the time you get to Mickey Mantle's father was throwing him 5,000 pitches a day and making him hit both ways and training him to be the best specimen of a professional athlete and baseball player. And I feel like we're all like Mickey Mantle's parents now, you know?
That's a great up. Great observation.
Yeah.
Continue on.
Yeah, and some of that's just, you know, a change in America, which is it's so competitive and the stakes seem so high, even for something so important, that nobody wants to leave anything to chance.
Wow.
Nobody just wants to let anything just develop. And this idea of free play, of kids like in the Newt Rockne era just going out like Red Grange and just playing in a vacant lot and getting good that way, now it's all like a science. And it's just sucked a lot of the joy out of it, you know. So I just feel like this is part of that, and it's everywhere. It's not just my older son's applying to college, and it's the college is the same thing as the hockey draft, but it's like for real.
Yeah,
it actually matters. Yeah. It feels like it does anyway. So it's way way worse. And also, the tryouts are so intense, you know. And it's like I wrote a story a couple of years ago about the NFL Combine. It's like the NFL Combine for 12-year-olds. You know,
yeah,
and they measure inner blade, outer blade. How's this turn? How's that turn? And the kids know what are going to be measured. So just like the SATs, they study for the test.
Ugh.
So they might not be even good hockey players. They're great skaters.
Yeah.
But you really don't find out who the good hockey players are until you're, you know, in a seven-game tournament and it's game five and your team's down by three and half the kids quit and half the kids redouble their effort. Those are the hockey players, and you got to play to find that out.
It sounds so, on one level, so I may be making too much of it, but so kind of emotionally unhealthy. But that, I think, is balanced by the fact that the parents, the kids, especially your kid, I can't wait to meet him one day. He doesn't pay that much attention to you and the other parents in the stands. They're in their world out there, and that is a healthy place, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Even when I was a kid, I interviewed for my Bears book. I interviewed Doug Plank, who said that he used to play football incredibly angry.
Yeah.
And he used to convince himself that the players on the other team had done something to him personally, okay? And he was going to get back at them, and that's how he played. Even as a little kid, that's kind of how I played hockey, you know?
Yeah.
It felt like
yeah.
I was angry the whole time I played. I couldn't say I was angry. Maybe it's like a little brother thing. And I used to tell my son when he was little, you kind of got to play this game angry, and he didn't. It's a completely different thing. He doesn't get angry, and he got sort of hurt, and then he got dumped from the first line to the fourth line.
Right.
I was pissed off about it because I thought he got hurt, you know, and you don't want these kids to lie about concussions, so you shouldn't punish them for saying, hey, I have symptoms or something. Yeah. And I was like, doesn't it piss you off? He said, no.
Yeah.
I don't understand. Why doesn't it make you angry? He said, because it's still hockey. I'm out here playing hockey. What do I care?
One of the things about the book, too, what comes through to me in Rich Cohn's latest, Pee-wee's Confessions of a Hockey Parent, is in so many ways the kids appear to be so much more mature and grounded than their parents or their coaches. We're going to take another break, come back, talk to Rich a little more. He's got a couple events. You know, it's so strange. I mean, you're as we've done an event together once at a synagogue on the North Shore, you're going to be doing a couple virtual events here, and I'll talk about what else is coming up. We'll be back in about 3 or 4 minutes. Welcome back. I have a few more minutes with Rich Cohn talking about Pee-wee's Confessions of a Hockey Parent. What did the hockey parent's child think of this book, Micah?
Well, I can't say he's read the whole book, but the only thing he really didn't like that I know is that I said that he was a Pee-wee that looked like a squirt.
Probably
I always looked young and small.
You probably scarred him forever. Rich is going to be here. Not here. You're not going to be here. He's going to be doing a couple virtual in the neighborhood things on January 19th at the bookstall in Winnetka. And February 3rd at the Great Anderson. They're both great bookstores, Anderson's Books in Naperville,
yeah.
And I'm sure that they're both great,
there
great.
Person,
yeah, no kidding. Me too. You can just go to Rich's website, which is richcohen.com.
It's actually authorrichcohen.com.
Oh, it is? Okay.
Somebody swooped in, bought the Rich Cohen when I missed the bill, okay?
Oh, come on.
And then tried to sell it back to me for like $1 million. So
well, that's too much. That's way too much. You wrote to me in a note. You can also go, if you go to the bookstall, bookstall's got a website, Anderson's got a website, but go to authorrichcohen.com and he'll have all the information. It's free. You just have to register. And he says in a note to me, there's a good chance that I'll cry, threaten, and make outlandish promises at these events, so the entertainment value could be high. And for those who stay late, I'll share my 12-step program for hockey parents, starting with the Herb Cohn rule, Herb Cohn being your father. The key to life is caring, but not that much. What do some of, have you heard from any of the other parents and or coaches who are featured in this book?
Yeah, well, I changed all the names and I disguised everything, so no one's really quite sure who's who, but I've heard from a lot of people.
Yeah, I'll bet.
And most of it is from the first chapter is about tryouts, and
yeah.
It's sort of the most intense experience in part of the book. And most of it's like people just bearing their soul to me. I mean, the book isn't even published yet, and I'm getting like you know, dozens or hundreds of letters a day from people just telling me their stories, their experiences, and a lot from coaches.
Yeah.
You know, about dealing with parents and what that's like. So that is where I got the idea for the 12-step program. I mean, it's like my whole career is based on the idea that if I feel it and I'm experiencing it, and so are millions of other people, because I'm in every way a typical person. So
yeah, that's a good way to feel. Rich also writes a lot for airmail.com, which is one of the great you got review. They did a book review of this book in there, didn't they? Airmail.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah, Airmail is a wonderful, wonderful site. What's your next piece on there on Airmail?
I have one, and I have a piece in the new one, actually, that's about, I wrote these six pieces that you know about the murder of Jennifer Farber Dulos.
Unbelievable.
And about a month ago, I sort of retraced the route that her husband, who presumably killed her, took that day, trying to figure out, you know, one of the mysteries is her body's never been found.
Right, right.
Just trying to retrace the route and figure what could have happened to her body, because that was, they had a lot of trouble bringing murder charges without a body. So that's in there right now.
The last time we talked on air, I asked if that was going to be the basis for another book. And you weren't sure.
Yeah, I've been I'm not sure. I think it could be a TV show, actually, and that's sort of what I've been trying to work, turn it into.
Even after your experience, your TV experience was Vinyl, which I thought was an incredible, incredible show that just kind of like vanished. What else are you working on? I mean, you are, if they said it on, you know, CBS Morning News, it must be true that you are, you know, among the most prolific authors I've ever known, and prolific and good. It's not always the same thing. What else are you working on?
I'm trying to do more on the Dulos thing. I'm thinking about turning it maybe into a book, and they're trying to fill in all the pieces, you know, around her life. I don't know if people know the story, but it was, you know, happened near where I live now, and it was this young woman just dropped her kids off at school one day and vanished. And by the way, her kids played hockey.
Yeah.
And it's all these same group of parents, and I feel like I grew up in the suburbs of Chicago, and then for a long time I lived in New York City, and it's like I came back to the suburbs, and 25 years had gone by, and it was like Rip Van Winkle, you know, and I felt like it's the same world, but it's a completely different world. And I've just tried to be exploring that in every way, you know.
Well, these two, I mean,
it's like the same game, but now the kids I played with are the parents, and I don't think we always do as well as our own parents do.
Of course not. Love to the family. One of these days, I'll see you, and we'll have a drink and reminisce. It's a wonderful, it's a really wonderful book, Pee-wee's Confessions of a Hockey Parent. It exists on a number of different levels, and your kid Micah. What happened to hockey season this year? And was there a hockey season, or did the pandemic shut everything down?
Yeah, he played today. I mean, they're playing. Actually, it's sort of it's horrible as it is. It means, because one of the main staples of being a hockey parent is waking up at 4 a.m. and driving 4 hours and sitting on, you know.
Right.
So they're basically just playing at the local rink, and they're scrimmaging and playing within teams in the organization. And our local rink has an outdoor rink, so that's really good. They could play outside, and you know, it's kind of good because they're playing. They're getting a lot of ice time because there's just not as many kids they're playing with. So
yeah, what did he get? What does he get out of hockey, Rich? Last question.
I think, you know what? I think it's made him. I think this is true of hockey. I think it's made him a better person. I mean, it's made him part of a team. It's taught him about being part of a team. It's taught him empathy. It's taught him about supporting other kids. It's taught him about accepting support from other kids and playing a game very hard and then accepting, and this is a lesson we can all use now, that when the game is over, you win or you lose, you accept it, you congratulate the other team, and you act like a decent person.
Yeah, well, if only that carried over into the real world. Rich, love to the family. Take care of yourself, and you'll be on the next time you're in town, or the next book, whichever comes first.
Absolutely.
Take care.
Great talking to you.
Yeah, you too, always. He's really something. Do go to authorrichcohn.com, because he has a lot of interesting books he's written about. His first book was a thing called Tough Jews, which was about Jewish mobsters, and it's one of the best books I've ever read, as is. I'm trying to find it here in my notes. His book about, well, you'll see all the books. His most recent before this one was The Last Pirate of New York, A Ghost Ship, A Killer, and the Birth of Gangster Nation. He also wrote a history of the Chess Brothers called Mockers and Rockers, The Chess Brothers and the Birth of Rock and Roll. he traveled with the Stones for a while and turned that into the Sun, the Moon, and the Rolling Stones. He is a polished, talented writer.